there you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's time for the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Also streaming live at KFARradio.com. Sponsored by Compos, your home for fun in the great outdoors. And now your host, Craig Compo.
Well, welcome, Fairbanks. It's another fine Saturday in Fairbanks, Alaska. Thanks for tuning in to the Compo Outdoor Show. What I like to do once in a while is bring on a buddy of mine that I've made a lot of trips with, and today I have Tom Carter. Tom runs MSI Auto over there on off 30th Avenue. Welcome, Tom.
Good morning.
Well, you know, you and I have made a lot of unique trips over the years, and I just wanted to talk about some of those that we go way back. But tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you come up to Alaska?
I arrived in Alaska as a military brat in July of 67, just in time for the flood.
Oh, perfect timing. Yes. But see, your mantra is you're normally late. So you were early for the flood, but you're late for everything else.
15 years old.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. So where were you living during the flood? On base, I guess?
On Fort Wayne, right, yeah.
So
the water came right up to the steps, but did not come into the first floor. But I was in the basement, and it was coming up through the drains like a geyser at Yellowstone, the floodwaters, that is. Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I was seven at the time and living over across from the old exploded Dairy Queen in Jim McGoffin's house. So, yeah, lots of memories of the flood. That's about it. You know, as a child, I think they say your memory goes back to like 5 to 7 years old, and I was seven at the time. So it was pretty traumatic. I remember that pretty well. But I think I first met you in 89. Do you remember that day?
Oh, yeah. That was infamous.
Yeah, so tell me about it. I mean, you came in the shop. I think you were looking for a sled.
I was. I had been a dog musher, and snow machining was kind of alien to me. But I had some friends that said, hey, we got to go to Summit and do this. And so I started combing dealerships. Where am I going to get a sled short notice for the weekend? And I always thought of you guys as a Marine. Mm. But at the last moment, I said, well, I'm going to pull into Compos and see what they've got. And I've been devastated ever since. I not only got a sled, but I got a trailer and a helmet. And I took the thing on a Friday. You said, bring it back on Monday. And I never brought it back.
You still have it, probably.
Anyway, pretty close.
Yeah. So that was an old Mach 1. And I remember I think it was, I don't remember if it was a demo or it was just on the showroom. And you seemed real trustworthy. And my dad always said, you know, you can judge somebody by their character, not their collateral. So, you went out and had some fun. And, you know, it's kind of like throwing the fishing line out and then reeling it in.
That's right.
Once you got them hooked, like, Tom's been one of our very best customers at Compos for decades now. But anyway, about 3 years later, that would have been in 92, we made kind of a unique trip. It was yourself, your brother Paul, Mitch Usabelli, myself. I think that was it. And we were sitting around having a beer somewhere and said, hey, wouldn't it be cool to go up the Charlie River on Sea-Doos? You know, we decided we wanted to take Sea-Doos to Circle, run up the 65 miles to the Charlie River and then go play on the Charlie River. I'd been on the Charlie before. My grandpa used to have a cabin there about 8 miles up. But you remember that trip pretty well?
Oh, that was a cool trip. You'd actually sold me 2 Sea-Doos.
Uh-huh.
And we brought those along with my brother Paul. Each of us was riding one, and you had the fuel in the boat.
Right.
And
right. I had a Hughes craft with an inboard, and we threw 1 Sea-Doo in the front of it, as I recall.
Yes.
And then we went up to the Charlie and unloaded, and then just left the boat there for the trip and went on up the Charlie, as I remember.
Let me think about this. We got the boat, we put the Sea-Doos in the waters on the Yukon,
yeah.
And we rode up sort of in tandem with Sea-Doos and the boat up to Charlie,
right.
ran into some unique character, a really unique character on the way.
Oh, yeah, and Charlie Kidd. Yeah.
Charlie Kidd, and we went up the Charlie about as far as we could until we got into really shallow rocks,
yeah.
And water.
I think it's about 8 miles up. I can't remember. My grandpa had a cabin there. It's actually was written up about in a book called, 80 Below. It was about an aircraft that crashed, and a guy lived for 80 days up there, and he wandered into my grandpa's old cabin. There was a trapper there at the time. But But yeah, I remember it was really hot that day. It was in the 80s.
It was warm.
And we saw Charlie wearing we were just right over by my grandpa's old cabin. I hadn't seen the cabin yet. It's kind of back in the woods. But he was wearing a black bear rug, basically, like, he stood up. I thought it was a black bear. Not the smartest thing to do when you're out in the woods, but
I remember him in the boat covered with that bear hide and all the flies.
Flies, yeah.
And the stench.
Oh.
And we were quite a ways downriver the first time we encountered him.
We were floating on sea-doos at that point, and he was floating.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we gave him a bottle of hooch,
yeah.
And we continued on upriver against the current.
Yeah.
And what really amazed me was he eventually caught up to us again. And
yeah.
He was paddling, and we were motorized.
Yeah.
And of course, the idea was to keep him friendly so he would watch our stuff. You know?
And I remember talking to some locals at Circle, said that when he came into Circle he was a hermit. And when he came into Circle, he never slept indoors. You know, he'd sleep like under the porch
right.
or something like that. And I remember he had like... his hair was all up in like a big bun or something on top of his hair, and he had flies all over him. And he was pretty rank.
It was wild.
Yeah. But yes. That was funny. You come around the corner on these modern watercraft, and then it's like going back into the 1800s. You see this guy, and his eyes were as big as ping pong balls. I remember him looking at us he thought we were aliens.
It was pretty frenzied. Yeah. I remember he had a dog with him, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He had a dog team up there, I think, too. I know that... I know we played on the Yukon because you got to be on the Yukon. There's over by Calico Bluff, which is beautiful. I think the Japanese have studied that bluff. It's got all those amazing formations in it, just down from the Charlie a bit. And there was a big cave on the side of that where water was rolling in and rolling out. It was, you know, big enough to drive. And I think I got a picture, a video of you on the Sea-Doo in that cave with the turbulent water going around it.
It was really unique.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't prepared for how large the river was.
Yeah.
My first excursion on the Yukon, really, and
right.
it was amazing.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. So anyway, that was 92, and I have at my house the little cassette. I think it's a Hi8. It just says Charlie River 1992 Sea-Doo. And
wow.
I've got to digitize it before I forget or lose it or something, but I really want to see that. We're going to look so young, Tom. How many, 40 years ago?
Yes.
40 years ago.
Yeah. Hard to believe.
Yeah. Some other trips I know that I haven't been on that I've always wanted to go on with you guys. You throw a bunch of ATVs in an aircraft, right? And
yes.
Tell me about that.
We're going to do that again this weekend.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
We're going to go to Chandelier Lake.
Oh, nice.
Courtesy of Rob Everts and Everts Air. And he's going to fly a C-46 up there loaded with off-road vehicles. Little ones, and we're going to go up in his Pilatus and stay the weekend. It's going to be another one of those bucket trips and just follow the trails around and check out Chandelier Lake.
It's beautiful. I've been there before. It's absolutely gorgeous. The neat part, too, it's going to be in the mid-80s, I think, this weekend. So
it's going to be pretty amazing.
Bring your sun lotion, and you guys are going to get fried up there.
The other trip you're referring to is Farewell.
Yes.
And we flew into Farewell. Crap, I don't know, 15 years ago, same scenario, C-46 hauling the stuff in, and then we flew in again, I think, in the Pilatus, as a matter of fact, and holy cow, some of us were out there for 30 days, and a friend,
wow.
Jack, had a permit for a bison, which was the impetus for the trip.
Sure.
And
you do any good?
We got a moose.
Good.
Yeah.
It's a hunting season.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of nice to have friends like Rob, you know.
Oh, boy.
It'd be impossible to get some of these places out.
A lot of horsepower there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I know you hadn't been into Tocina Lake, one of my favorite places. That's, Bill Hager owned that. Ralph Seekins has it now. It's about 50 miles due south of Cantwell. I just was shocked before a program today talking to you. I thought sure you'd been in there before, but that is one of the most beautiful places in the world. We've been hunting in there since... Well, I got my first moose in there when I was very young. Lots of caribou. Go in by snow machines. We do bear hunting in there in the spring. It's just a really fantastic trip. And I know you've spent a lot of time snow machining. What I like about Tom is Tom's a little bit older than I am, but he's every single weekend he can get out. He's gone. He's going again this weekend on another one of these memorable trips. What do you like? I mean, you're always up for the adventure. I know you had knee surgery a while ago, so you know our warranties are running out. But how are you holding up physically?
Good, good. Both knees, both hands, just tuned up, and we just keep going. We did another really cool trip last year. Year before, we left Murphy Dome and snow machined to the Sawtooth Mountains.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that was pretty interesting now, trip.
Tell me about that. How long a run is that into the? You go down to the base of the mountains pretty much, don't you? It's like an amphitheater in there.
It is, and that we ended up on the summit where the old mine is, and there's lots of good stories about that. I learned a lot about that from Killian, and the trip it took us 3-4 days to get in there, and once we had the trail broken in again, the old trail. I think now a person could make it from Murphy Dome in there in 8 hours.
Okay.
Maybe less.
You guys were just taking your time, deep snow that year?
Deep snow. The trail hadn't been used in years.
You must have had wide tracks from Compos.
We did.
See how I get those
plugs in. We were on Scandix.
Yeah.
And on the last weekend of the trip coming out, it was in March. So it wasn't last March. March the year before. So that would have been 20, I guess.
Yeah. Middle of COVID.
It went to 30 or 40 below.
Oh, man.
And we weren't expecting
that. What do you
got, wall tents? Out there in Arctic ovens, thank goodness, yeah. But the propane didn't work.
Oh.
And a couple of the sleds wouldn't start, but we got that worked out. We heated them up.
Those Polaris that the guys
brought. Yeah, those darn four strokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we've
it was really something.
That's the thing about what we do. I mean, you got to be prepared for anything, right? I mean, because you can get up there and just nothing works, no heat. You got to have everything ready. We're talking with Tom Carter from MSI and just about a bunch of good trips we've made together. There's a group of us that hunt every fall up on the Good Pasture. Tom's part of that group. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show. The trips that I remember most obviously are my hunting trips. I love my hunting trips. I take basically the middle of August to the middle of September off. I'm hardly ever in town. I'll come back to restock some food or parts or whatever we need. But those are great trips. We're going to talk about that. One other trip that we made that was really interesting was with Coke Wallace. Remember we went in, I don't know how many years ago that was, probably 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
A long time ago. Into the Alaska Range.
Yeah.
From Glitter Gulch area.
Yeah, we went in on sleds. We were hauling a bunch of hay for the horses, I think.
That's right.
We had wide tracks. We were heavily loaded, deep snow. There was getting a lot of, we got stuck a fair amount. You know, it was pretty deep stuff. But I remember what was really cool was we came upon some wolves, there's 7 sheep on the side of the mountain, and they were moving. They came down, and the wolves had attacked some sheep, and they were just fresh kill.
It was right on the trail.
Yeah.
The wolves pushed them off the mountain. That was at the headwaters of the Wood River.
Yeah.
Up by Wagner's
place.
Carlo Creek area. Yeah. And they pushed one down on the trail, and the thing was just mangled.
Yep.
When we came upon it, we scared the wolves off. And it seems to me we took some of that meat and made omelets.
We had
pretty good.
Sheep heart and sheep backstrap omelets the next morning.
Right.
That was fantastic.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, we were in one of Coke's places. Yeah, that's Coke Wallace, a longtime friend of ours, too. He runs a outfitting service down there at Healy off the Stampede Trail. He's always a great resource. I mean, Coke's got some great stories.
Oh, boy.
Have you ever been in hunting with him? I don't know. You know, I know he's always a busy guy.
I haven't actually been hunting. I've been fishing with him, and I've been into his camps doing resupplies.
Sure.
However, my wife Denise has hunted with him.
Oh.
And a few years ago he called us up and said, hey, I got an opening here. Denise had a permit for a caribou.
Nice.
And she flew in and got a beautiful caribou. She flew in with Robert Wing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. All right, Fairbanks, well, we're going to keep talking outdoor stuff with Tom Carter. We'll be back after these messages.
The Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio will return right after this.
For more than 75 years, the go-to outdoor business in Fairbanks has been Compo's. Bob Compo Sr. first opened the doors on 12th and Cushman in 1945. A lot has changed since then, but one thing hasn't changed. Compo's passion for getting you outdoors and away from the rat race, and their business philosophy can be wrapped up in a few words Bob Sr. used to say. And that's, treat people right and they'll tell a few others. Treat them poorly and they'll tell a few dozen. Compo, on Boat Street, doing business in Fairbanks since Harry Truman was president.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30, a look at Alaska's budding new industry, brought to you by Good Titrations, followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon. Then it's the Compo's Outdoor Show at 12:30. And don't miss Fairbanks Foodies at 5:30, talking everything food and fun in Fairbanks. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio. And now, back to the Compo's Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio.
Welcome back, Fairbanks. I'm with Tom Carter, owner of MSI Auto over there off 30th Avenue. And I always like to plug businesses of my buddies. Sure. Tom's got whatever you need for your old rig. It's, you know, whether it's alternators, tires, transmissions, you name it, you've got it all. It seems like every time I need something for one of my old beater shop rigs, you've either got it or you get it quick. And how long has that business been around, Tom?
Well, on our part, 30 plus years.
Wow.
Now, it's just hard to believe.
Yeah, you got the beautiful sign right off the expressway there before you hit the heading out towards the lake. It's just a big yard, lots of stuff. So if you're looking for used auto parts for your truck, car, whatever, get a hold of Tom over there at MSI. So there's your free plug, Tom.
Well, sure, I'll take that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about some unique trips we've made over the years. Tom and myself and a bunch of others made some really special trips. We were just talking about when we had sheep heart omelets over at Carlo Creek with Coke Wallace. And I had forgot you mentioned that about that skull that he found.
Tell us somebody hung a trophy. Well, not... Anyway, they put a skull on a tree of a sheep's head, mm-hmm. and the tree and the skull became intertwined. The tree grew into it.
Isn't that bizarre?
It was. And so it was like, wow. So cut the thing down, and Coke has that as a nice memento. You know, he left it embedded in the trunk, and it was pretty neat.
Yeah, that's cool. That's neat country over there, you know. It's amazing. You know, he's got... Coke Wallace has got some really cool country. For years, he had one of the things he used to laugh about was the bus, the old bus from Into the Wild. He would have people that come up from the States, usually would hike into his place,
right.
got a ride, and then was walking with the backpack, and they would want to go see the bus. And he always thought that was so silly, but he was happy to charge him $400 to take him in.
That's right.
To go see the bus where McCandless died.
Known locally as the Dead Guy Bus.
The Dead Guy Bus,
right.
We call that. Yeah, I wrote a song about that.
Yes, you did.
Called Permafrost for Brains.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people got into some pretty horrific circumstances trying to cross that river to go see that bus. Usually they'd get across the river and couldn't get back.
Right,
and
the Teclanica, yeah,
caused a lot of issues.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. Coke's got a son named Parker.
Yep.
And Parker, when he was 16 or something, Coke told me one time some guy came up, real scruffy looking guy, and Parker's sitting there whittling a piece of wood, and the guy come up and says, "Hey, I'd like to go back to the bus," and Parker looked up at him and he goes, "Yeah, you're not bus worthy. They told me it wasn't bus worthy. But anyway, I think they've moved, well, they've moved the bus since, right?
And yes, it's out of there. I think the university's got it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, a couple of areas that you and I spent a lot of time playing over the years is down at Summit Lake and Kentwell, snow machining. Some of the best trips I remember. My first real trip down there, Tom, was 1974. My dad had just bought a Pace Aero motorhome. We took the whole shop crew and pulled over at the monument. And we had, you know, a couple of four-place trailers full of old machines. And I was on an Elan. I was 14. The thing would go anywhere, of course. But we went all the way up to the USGS cabin. I almost went over the top. I didn't know there was a 600-foot drop there.
Right.
I was just cutting it up left to right. Everybody else was sitting down watching me go up there, and I saw what looked like a snow machine track, but it was just a wind drift to nowhere. So I slammed the brakes on and realized, yeah, that isn't a place you'd want to go over the top. But
well, thinking about those days makes my hands sweat, really, because we did some crazy things. Well, it was all about horsepower. The first trip you and I did was to Miller Creek,
yep.
To the collarbone.
Yeah.
And
that's phenomenal.
That was really, really something.
Yeah, you put in at Miller Creek and you go up the glacier. It's about 7 miles of glacier, as I remember, up to the top towards the collarbone. Then you can come all the way around by the tit, come out by Summit Lake. Made a lot of those trips over the years. Just beautiful country. You know, a lot of people don't go there because of crevices. I've flown in two myself over the years, so yeah, there is some safety issues. I think what saved our bacon, Tom, over the years is those machines couldn't go where you can go now.
No.
And we didn't have the common sense. We were just into how high can I go, how far can I go, and the, you know, the belts and the clutches and the tracks and lugs, lack of lugs, that was your governor. That was your limiting factor. Would have been dead long ago if we had a machine like today, because that's the thing I always tell people when they buy these new machines, especially younger kids. I said, just because it can get you there doesn't mean you have to go there.
Right.
You know, you've got to use some common sense. You got to peel out. You got to do some, you know, avalanche research, because stuff happens fast, you know, on the side of a hill. So you got to do it. But have you had any near misses?
Oh, boy. Yeah. The thing is, we did have to go there. That was the issue. That was our mindset.
Yeah, I
and
know.
We burned up lots of belts, just shredded them. On so many memorable trips, Ron Young, who's deceased, great snow machiner, great outdoorsman, loved to go up on the College Glacier and go over the top and come out behind the tit.
Yeah.
And that was a belt-eating hill.
Oh, yeah.
And the Golcana Glacier, getting up to the top of that thing to overlook the Canwell, another belt-eating hill.
I remember actually in 1985, the old Formula Plus, when it first came out, we had deep snow. Keith from my shop was on the on the Formula Plus, and just to get up and back to the lookout onto the Canwell Glacier, 7 drive belts, you know.
Right. Oh,
and
yeah.
Now you can go 2 years on a drive belt. You know, it's just crazy the technology, how it's changed. And
I've never replaced the belt on that 174 I got from you. You know, it's
what
just,
year is that?
Oh, man.
15 or something?
It's about a 15.
Yeah.
About the first year the T3 came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was the ultimate. Now my son-in-law has got the new machine, the 165 with the turbo, and I rode that the first time down in the Healy area and on the Denali Highway this spring, and I jumped on that thing, and I'll just show you what this thing will do, Josh, because he was sort of new, and I grabbed onto that thing, and the skis came off the ground, and I was up that hill so fast beyond where I wanted to go. I just got it turned out and got it back to the bottom, and I looked good, but it scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, they do. They're just flickable power. It takes so little power, and you don't need a head start anymore. You can start right at the base of a hill
and
crack
go.
The throttle and
yes.
go. You know, 3-inch lugs and 175 horsepower better. So
and you can correct on the way up.
Yeah,
that's the big deal.
Yeah,
you know, when the Thundercat was the first one that I ever rode that could do that, and then the Mach-Z and so on after it, and now that's nice to be able to change course on the hill and think a little bit about where you're going. It's a good thing they didn't have those 25 years ago, or we wouldn't be talking here.
So let's see, one more trip that was memorable, not kind of unfortunate, but was really special. It's a special area. It was up on the Good Pasture where we hunt every year. We went up a few years ago. I don't know what it's been, 6 or 7 years ago. And you and I got up at our camp at 75 Mile. We have a hunting camp up there, and we went on up out to a place we call Misquatch, and there's a little slough that runs behind it, and we sat in there for 2 or 3 hours. We got up real early, like daybreak, yeah, you know, 6 o'clock, and got in there and just sat there. And a friend of ours, a customer of ours, and his son had come up behind us. They were parked somewhere in that, I don't know where they were exactly, but they had a fully loaded boat, overloaded, and they got up to a bad spot, which you got to kind of skip over. It's kind of like a log jam, but it's, you know, it's all a bunch of brush in there, and you got to either go around it, which is a real skinny little technical, you're hanging the nose of the boat over the sand and everything. Anyway, we did that, and we had told those guys several times, don't try and go through the log jam. There's sticks. I mean, you get right. sucked in there. And unfortunately, that's what happened. They made a bad move. They flipped the boat. We're up there just watching for moose, and about, I don't know, 10 o'clock, we decided to come back down to camp. And I didn't even see, because I'm just looking at our line with that skinny little wraparound there. But you looked up, and you saw what was going on, huh?
Yeah, that was something. I have to point out, we usually leave at 4 a.m. and we're on site at 6 a.m.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we're working for this stuff.
Yeah.
And we were on the river coming down. I think we were above the bridge. And we saw this guy
the Pogo Bridge,
on the bank. Yeah, on the Pogo Bridge. And he was on the bank waving. And it's like, what the heck is this guy doing out here? Then we see the boat capsized against the log jam.
Yeah.
And
what had happened is he tried to just go through that debris, and he got something in his jet, and he couldn't get it out quick enough, and of course floated back into the log jam. Boat goes upside down, both him and his dad go into water. His dad got out first, got up on top of this floating log jam,
right,
and then
like elbows
right
above.
And then when the sun was going, his son, you know, he's 35 40, when he was going to get out of, you know, climbed up the boat, and when he went to step onto the log jam, his dad fell through those logs,
right,
and then he held him. You know, he held on to him as long as he could. His boots were filling with water, and he lost him. He went under, yep. And I remember we had cadaver dogs up there. We had the search and rescue, the cops. We shuttled. We spent about 4 or 5 days. They never did find him. So I mean, that's how bad things can happen fast on the river.
No, this state will take you.
Yeah.
We spent 12 hours with the search and rescue team from Pogo.
Yeah.
Recovering the boat, getting.
Yep.
The survivor, the son, out of there. The chopper took him out.
Right.
And then we had to really rig up some special pulleys and a winch to pull that boat.
But you had
off
your
jam.
You had your inReach. So
I
as
did.
Soon as we realized what happened, you hit emergency on your inReach, and that sent a Black Hawk helicopter. It didn't seem like it was, but 30-40
no.
minutes, and there they were, landed on the beach. Took the son in. You know, they looked all over for the father, and we knew he wasn't. He wasn't alive anymore.
If there's one piece of gear I take with me any place in the wilderness, in any place, it's an inReach.
Yeah, yeah.
Cannot say enough about the inReach.
Yeah. Did I mention we sell them at Compost?
I think that's where I got one for myself and my wife. Yeah, you just have to have it.
Yeah. Well, we do a lot of hunting up there. We've had real successful hunts. It's a long trip, you know, and you can't just go up there. You got to probably stash fuel throughout the year because it's tough, and hope the bears don't get to your polycubes.
That's right. Or the airboats.
Yeah. Well, listen, what about bucket list? What's on your list, Tom, you want to do yet? I've got one trip, you know, that a customer of ours does that I think that's really cool. He goes when they get an early snow down at Summit Lake, like real heavy in the hills. But, you know, you can't get up to it because it's so brushy and rocks it just down low. It'll destroy your sled. This customer takes a side-by-side ant with two sleds on the back of it. I mean, he hooks it, and he takes two vehicles down there,
yep.
But then they put the sleds on the trailer. They go up until they get as much into the snow where they can't go any further. Then they unload the sleds, and they go up, and they're in armpit deep powder. So
probably up to, like, the Monkey Bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And we used to do that, too. And I quit doing that in the spring. Well, actually, in the early winter, so Thanksgiving time, mm-hmm. because we kept back in the day with trailing arms, and we kept destroying the sleds.
Yeah, but I just thought that was neat. You're doing four-wheeling, so we gotta put that on our list. Hey, we've been talking with Tom Carter from Miller Salvage about some good old trips. Makes me want to get out right after the show and go out and go play. Well, Tom, thanks for coming in. Thanks for sharing some stories with us. We'd like to have you back sometime.
Sure. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio, streaming live at kfarradio.com. To listen back to this program or any past episodes, simply click on the Compos Outdoor Show in the Archives tab on the website.